Hey, Chutzpod listeners. I want to tell you quickly about another podcast that I think you might really like. It's called Love Letters. The show is hosted by Boston Globe advice columnist Meredith Goldstein, and it tells real people stories about dating, relationships, and falling in love. The theme of the new Love Letters season is thanks for the help. You'll hear beautiful stories about the many different ways that people get help or assistance in their romantic lives, from friends, relatives, from therapists, and even from their exes. Love Letters from the Boston Globe and PRX. New episodes are available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Shalom, Rabbi.
Shalom, Joshua. You seem so excited.
I am excited. We're going to celebrate today, correct?
That is correct. Very excited. This week marks the 100th anniversary of the Bat Mitzvah, and we want to mark it because it has been a time of great transition and growth for the Jewish people in America, and we're really lucky to get to live here during this moment.
That's right. And even during dark times, and it's always dark times, we celebrate.
And we are going to talk about Ukraine before the end of this episode, because even as we're marking the 100th anniversary of the Bat Mitzvah here in Washington, or you in LA, or in New York City, there are still terrible things happening overseas. And what we're going to need to do is, in addition to or parallel to our fear and our anger and our sadness, we're also going to acknowledge the ongoing evolution of the Jewish people.
So, correct me if I'm wrong, Rabbi, but I think what I hear you saying is celebrate good times. Come on. Celebrate good times. Come on. Celebrate. Rabbi, were you Bat Mitzvahed?
Before we jump into the answer to your question, I first want to talk for a second about what a Bat Mitzvah is. Even though we're going to talk about it in much greater detail over the course of the podcast, which is, it is a coming of age moment for Jewish girls, as a bar mitzvah is a coming of age moment for Jewish boys. The ancient Jewish tradition, of course, is divided into a gender binary of girls and boys. And we will talk about that before the end of this episode as well. The B mitzvah, which Baruch Hashem, has also been coming of age recently. But in Jewish tradition, a Jewish girl becomes bat mitzvah when she turns 12, and a Jewish boy becomes bar mitzvah when he turns 13. That happens no matter what. Whether or not you have the chocolate fountain, whether or not you play Coke or Pepsi, that is happening.
I believe this is the official recognition by Judaism of the fact that girls are more mature than boys, right? So at 12, if you're a girl, you're an adult. And for boys, if you ask me, for boys, it should be like 28. But Judaism recognizes a boy reaching maturity at 13.
By the way, that is almost exactly what the rabbis say. Here's how it goes.
Is that true? I mean, that's how I've always taken it.
And I'm using like rabbinic shorthand, so you're just going to have to trust me. The rabbis say, how do you know when someone has reached an age of maturity? It's when you grow your first two pubic hairs. But since, thank God, even 2,000 years ago, the rabbis knew it was not okay to go around checking people's pubic hairs.
I got my pubic hair when I was about 15 or 16. I'm talking my public hair. What are you talking about? Yeah. The hair on your chest, your arms, your head, the hair the public can see.
I see.
So instead, they said we're going to set these ages of 12 for a girl and 13 for a boy. And that's really the age at which you do reach a certain sense of physical maturity. And the recognition is that girls reach it before boys do.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So you're prescient in knowing that. But so what I was saying before is that, you know, you don't really get bat mitzvah unless you're talking about literally waking up on your birthday.
You become a bat mitzvah. You don't graduate from college. You are graduated from college, and people don't get that. Right. I may be wrong about that.
I didn't know that.
I don't know. All I know is I went to Yale.
And at Yale, you are graduated. Anyway, so, okay, my bat mitzvah was in 1986 at Addis, Israel. 48 years old? Listen to this. V'natna ha'aretz piryav, achaltem la'sova, v'shavtem la'vetach aleha, v'chi tomru. I could go on.
Beautiful. She's still got it.
I could sing the entire Torah portion. Of all the things I need to remember, I do kind of think it's more important to remember to get milk and eggs than my bat mitzvah portion, but whatever. I don't know how the brain works. I do also remember that, you know, my bat mitzvah was officiated by a female rabbi. That was not very common. My rabbi, Avis Miller, I just took it for granted. And I'm realizing now that I was on the vanguard, I mean, she was on the vanguard of being a female rabbi, but I was on the vanguard of young American Jews who grow up assuming that women can be rabbis. Nowadays, thank God, that people of all genders can be rabbis. That was just something I really took for granted.
Do you have memories of the party?
I had one of those bat mitzvahs in which the theme was Judaism. And so the party was like a luncheon at the synagogue in the K auditorium. Everyone was home by like 2:30. It was done.
Of course, I cannot share a personal memory of having had a bat mitzvah because I had a bar mitzvah. But I have two sisters, both of whom became benot mitzvah, and they each shared a memory. So first up, we have my older sister, Toby.
When I was a kid, our synagogue was in the basement of a home in Westchester, New York, and my bat mitzvah took place in that cozy basement. And I remember standing in front of the congregation, of course, a small congregation. Everybody knew everybody. And I was nervous, holding this enormous Havdalah candle, or what seemed enormous to me at the time as a small person. The top of the candle was above the top of my head. I remember the rabbi lighting it and my feeling the intensity of what seemed like the huge flame just above my head. And I said the prayers and I did my thing and it was over and I was so pleased with myself. And afterwards, I went to the ladies' room to sort of gather myself and look in the mirror and appreciate what I had done. And I realized that I had burnt the top of my hair from the enormous flame on the Havdalah candle.
Oh, well, that was a funny and a little bit sad memory, but also it made me realize something I hadn't realized, although I was undoubtedly at my sister's bat mitzvah. I was probably 10 or 10 and a half. So we belong to an Orthodox synagogue. And so when she references Havdalah and a Havdalah candle, that is the ritual for when Shabbat, Sabbath, is over and we go back into a regular week. We have a ritual of lighting a candle and smelling spices called Havdalah, which Havdalah differentiates between the holiness of Sabbath ending and the rest of the week. But because we were at an Orthodox synagogue, she wouldn't read from the Torah like I did at my bar mitzvah and chant the Haftorah. She was sort of relegated to doing this, I don't want to say a lesser thing. And I asked her, and she has no memory of caring or being aware that there was anything different from what I would do as a bar mitzvah. Is that what Orthodox bat mitzvahs are like now?
There is a tremendous diversity among Orthodox communities about how to celebrate young women becoming bat mitzvah. And certainly leading Havdalah is one of many options. Actually, we're going to hear a different story later of another girl who became bat mitzvah in an Orthodox community in a very different way.
Sometimes they'll just have the young woman make a kugel.
Yes. Hopefully not potato kugel. I hate potato kugel.
And now a memory. I'm so delighted that both my sisters stepped up for me. Now a memory from my younger sister, Nicole, who is 8 years younger than I.
So in 1986, I was 12 years old. I was incredibly lucky that my parents really generously took a whole contingent of our family to Israel to celebrate my bat mitzvah with me. I was at a synagogue on top of Mount Scopus, and very beautiful, wonderful experience. And I should mention that I'm the youngest of the three siblings in my family and also of all of the grandkids on both sides, significantly younger. And so I was kind of used to this thing of being left out of what the older kids could do. And that particularly really hit me when we were in Israel for my bat mitzvah, that I would be left out of anything. Didn't come to find out till years later that the reason I wasn't invited to come on walks around town is because my siblings were in the Arab Shuk smoking hashish with some of the, you know, owners of the markets there. And later on, come to find out that's also why I wasn't invited for walks around the block after Seder every year. That's okay. I understood when I was older. But all of this kind of coalesced with a picture taken at the Hotel King David during my bat mitzvah with my entire family just smiling and happy to be there, and me in the front with my head in my hand, just a really surly, sort of annoyed 12-year-old.
There you have it. That is my sister slash narc, Nicole Molina.
That is not okay.
No, it is okay. First of all, we just were ahead of the curve. We knew someday soon it would be legal. And also, I think we were just, my sister and I, Toby and I, were exploring a potential peace talks as we smoked hash with Arabs in the Shuk.
Oh, amen, amen, Sela.
Right? They were friendly. They accepted us. We got past our language barriers. Peace is possible, people. I'm telling you.
May one day we all smoke up together.
And I can't remember how we explained to my parents the expensive and fragile hookahs that we bought and had to somehow take their security back on the plane to get home.
Also, I never could have figured out the difference between hashish and marijuana. Is it the same exact thing?
I'll teach you on Purim, on the Purim Zoom.
Okay.
And also, that is a classic, classic, iconic photograph from the Molina family that I can share on the website of everybody just absolutely beaming and thrilled to be in Israel, except for the bat mitzvah girl herself.
Because you were all stoned.
No, not at the ceremony. No, no. Night before, sure.
Let me ask you a question.
Oh, I hate when you do that. Actually, I love it.
Why do we have bat mitzvah? What is that about? What is happening? It's not the moment that someone becomes Jewish. They're already Jewish. So what do you think it's about?
Okay. And not in contrast to bar mitzvah, just what are these ceremonies about? Yes?
That's exactly right. Just what are these rites of passage ceremonies at the age of 12, 13-ish?
Okay. My take or understanding is that this is when we're saying, you've been in training for a while. Now it's the real deal. The mitzvot, the commandments are incumbent upon you. And it's time to sort of step up and take agency and decide how you're going to be a Jew and part of this community.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Oh, yeah.
Here's the thing. Obviously, when the idea of bat mitzvah was created thousands of years ago, a 13-year-old was at a different part, or a 12-year-old was at a different part of their life stage than in 2022.
They were often grandparents.
If they were not grandparents, they were very soon going to become, God willing, parents. And so that was a moment that these children became adults in the Jewish mindset. And as you said, it was the moment that the mitzvot, the commandments, became incumbent upon them. In fact, there is a blessing that parents traditionally say at bi mitzvahs, which is Baruch Shaftarani Mizo. Blessed is the God who has freed me from responsibility for this one, which may have felt true to parents thousands of years ago. But certainly as a parent of two children who are still in their teen years, I don't feel like I've been freed from the responsibility of them. So the way that we understand it differently today, and this is true, that a 13-year-old kid is moving into a space where they are taking responsibility for their actions. They have to take responsibility for their actions. If a 5-year-old on the playground punches another 5-year-old on the playground, the 5-year-old might get in some sort of trouble, but they're not going to be blamed the way if a 13-year-old punches someone else in the playground. And I am watching my children. I'm watching my daughters now, making all sorts of choices about who they want to be in the world. And there's only so much I can control it. There's only so much that I can say. And so now it's not about sending them out into the work world. It's more about sort of recognizing that they are taking on their ethical, moral obligations more than they were in previous years.
Mm-hmm. You will be tried as an adult. That's the message we're giving our kids.
Yes, although I don't like it when you say it that way.
No, that's awful.
So let's turn to one of the voice memos that we got when we asked people on social media to talk to us about their benot mitzvah. This from a high school student in New York.
Hi, my name is Bat Sperling Milner. I'm 15 and I live in the Bronx. So my bat mitzvah was groundbreaking and unusual in a lot of ways. I'm blind, I'm a woman, and I'm a member of the modern Orthodox community. And historically, those three things would limit my bat mitzvah or even disqualify it. However, what happened at my bat mitzvah was pretty amazing. I read my entire Torah portion using a Braille text. I led morning prayers, and I gave a speech to my congregation of more than 400 people. And throughout that time, there were a lot of people who were creating stories in their minds about what this meant for them, how I was inspiring, how what I was doing was so great for them and somehow impacted them. And all of this did not really line up with my vision of what my bat mitzvah was about. For me, it wasn't about being an inspiration or doing something so inherently great. For me, it was about feeling proud of what I had achieved and feeling grateful for the generations of blind leaders, Jewish and not, who had paved the way for me from the invention of Braille to the invention of Hebrew Braille and the innovations in the rabbinical space by blind Jews and blind Jewish women. And so for me, it was about being proud and also being hopeful for the future that I had in my evolving relationship with Judaism, spirituality, and God.
It's humbling and moving to hear a message like that. And it reminds me how the breadth of the Jewish community, and it makes me happy that she was able to have that experience in a modern Orthodox setting. It's surprising in a way, in a very joyous way.
When you hear her story, I think that for many young people, the process of getting to the bima, to the pulpit, takes a lot of twists and turns. It's not the sort of straight, obvious line. And everyone has a story by the time they get up there. And I cannot remember a moment where I've sat and watched a kid become bat mitzvah, where I've thought to myself, oh, that schnook, they didn't do anything. Every time you see a kid up there taking their place in the chain of tradition, it is inspiring and reflects back on me to continue doing the work to be the Jew that I want to be in this world.
Well said.
Speaking about inspiring people, Rabbi Lauren is a graduate of the Reconstructionist Rabbinical College, the rabbi of SAJ, Judaism That Stands for All, which used to be called the Society for the Advancement of Judaism on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. It was the synagogue where Rabbi Mordechai Kaplan, who's one of the founders of Reconstructionism, was one of the synagogues at which he worked over the course of his lifetime. Lauren is a badass. She is an activist who has worked tirelessly to lift up the voices of the vulnerable. She was the founding rabbi of Congregation Kol Tzedek in West Philly, among many other extraordinary things she's done over the course of her career.
SAJ, not to be confused with SAG, the Screen Actors Guild, another group of inspiring Jews.
Over to Rabbi Lauren Graybell Herman. Rabbi Lauren, welcome to the podcast. Lauren is one of the leaders of the effort to have a celebration in honor of the 100th anniversary of the first bat mitzvah in America. That would be the bat mitzvah of Judith Kaplan, the daughter of Rabbi Mordechai Kaplan, which is going to be celebrated the weekend of March 18th and 19th, 2022. She's been doing this in partnership with the Jewish Women's Archives, and especially with Carol Balin, who is a professor who is writing the book on bat mitzvahs, on benot mitzvah. In addition, there are more than 18 other organizations that have partnered with them on this project, including at least one Orthodox organization. So I guess I'll just open by saying, first of all, hi, and I love you so much. And second of all, we're blowing kisses at each other through Zoom. But second of all, why don't you talk a little bit about why you decided to do this right now?
I had been planning for SAJ's 100th anniversary in general, because the 100th anniversary of the synagogue is also the 100th anniversary of the bat mitzvah. Coincidence? I think not. So what happened was, in my research, I found out that Kaplan introduced bat mitzvah within like seconds of entering SAJ and beginning this new congregation. It was within 4 weeks, actually. In the scope of Jewish time, it was a nanosecond before he basically came to the board of directors and said, I want to introduce bat mitzvah in this congregation. Now think about it. Now it sounds like a tame thing. It's not a big deal. Totally universal. It had never happened in the entire history of the Jewish people. And that means that when Kaplan left the Jewish Center and came to SAJ, he had bat mitzvah on his mind. It wasn't something small. It was something significant. He knew he wanted to be in a place where he could advance radical ideas of equality and bringing more people to the table. I know that he complained that women talked about food too much, right? That they were too much the party planners of Judaism, and they weren't actually taking their part in the history, in the Torah, in the discussion. I knew that SAJ was the place where bat mitzvah happened, but I don't think I realized how integral it was to the very founding of the congregation. In some ways, the very idea of Mordechai Kaplan himself, that was such a central idea. And I thought, this has to be celebrated because this is how change happens. This is about wanting to create space and have a model of Judaism that is constantly looking and seeing who's on the outside, how can we bring them in, what can we do to bring them in, and how can we think outside of our normal ways of thinking in order to do that. And I just think that is a story that absolutely needs to be celebrated because it's not just about women. It is obviously about women and the barriers women had to take to get to the place where we are in now, and there's still barriers to go, but it's also about Jews of color. It's about people who don't have Jewish education or Jewish upbringing, Jews of choice. It's about transgender Jews and non-binary Jews. It's just an amazing, important story that I think we need to tell and celebrate and expand.
I feel like sometimes I get criticized for marking something like the 100th anniversary of a bat mitzvah by people who say, why are we celebrating something that should be a given, right? Which in this case is that people of all genders should be treated equally.
100%, but also we think about it, 100 years is nothing in the history of the Jewish people. And the fact that this happened just 100 years ago is significant. I mean, there were stories, there are historical accounts of group benot mitzvah in Europe. I know that there are scholars who talk about that. So we are talking about this as the first American bat mitzvah. It's really the first bat mitzvah in the paradigm of what we know today, where individual children really take their place in the whole history. It's significant because people might grow up today and girls might grow up today and think this was just something that has been happening. For them to know that it was actually 100 years ago and it was a decision and it took a long time for it to catch. It grew. It was consistently moving and growing, but it took a good amount of time before it became really mainstream. And the truth is, there are still places where women and girls are excluded. There are plenty of places where trans and non-binary kids are excluded, or at least not included proactively. So there's still a lot of work to do.
Yeah. And to put it in context, this took place, I think, about 2 years after women got the vote in the United States.
And that's another piece that was so intriguing to me that Kaplan wrote in his diary about women's suffrage. And he actually gave a couple sermons about women and Judaism back in the 1921, right? Before even this happened, he was frustrated. He was like, it's time, right? Kaplan believed very strongly that we evolve and grow as a Jewish people. Wherever we are, we borrow and we take and we learn and we adapt and we figure it out. And that we shouldn't be afraid of that. We should actually embrace that. That's what Jews have always done. Jews have always looked to the culture around them. And we've contributed to that culture around us when we've been able to. And we've also taken and adapted from that culture and made it our own. And we have so many historical examples of that. My sense is that Kaplan was himself extremely influenced by the suffrage movement, by the right to vote. And that was an inspiration, if not the primary inspiration for him to say, hey, if women can vote, women should vote in Judaism, right? Women should have a voice at the table.
This is such a great case study of how activism happens. So maybe there was one bat mitzvah at this one synagogue. And what was she allowed to do? Was she allowed to read from the Torah?
Is the amazing thing about it. She was told about her bat mitzvah. I mean, she knew there was some discussion ahead of time, but she was told that it was going to be when it was the night before it happened. She was studying. I mean, she knew she was very knowledgeable. She was capable. You know what I mean? But he said, okay, you're going to do this. She read basically an extra section of Torah, but it wasn't the Torah portion that was that day. It was from Kiddushim, from the Holiness Codes. They had a division between men and women. And Judith talks about how she was really uncomfortable because she had to sit in the men's section for the first time. She had always been surrounded by her mother and her grandmothers. And then she had to move into the men's section. She stood up in her seat. She was still a distance from the Torah and she read her portion and she did the blessings. So it was really different than it is today, but it was still tremendously different than anything that had ever been seen before.
Brave of her.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that she had some of her own sort of ambivalence about it because it wasn't her choice completely, right? She was something she was asked to do.
Oh, Lauren, you're just the best. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast today.
One of the roles that Torah plays right now is in giving people a mirror to what they're feeling, what they're experiencing, and maybe even a window to where they want to go. I'm Alana Steinhain, Rosh Beit Midrash and Senior Fellow at the Shalom Hartman Institute. I'm excited to share that I am the host of Texting, a new podcast where ancient wisdom meets contemporary relevance from Hartman's award-winning digital team. On each show, Hartman scholars Christine Hayes, Yona Hain, or Leah Robotnitsky will join me to delve into a Torah text that offers insight and inspiration about the issues that matter to you and to our community.
I got the feeling from the various explanations that the rabbis gave that God also feels broken.
You can listen to Texting at shalomhartman.org/texting or wherever you get your podcasts. I look forward to learning with you.
Thank you, Rabbi Lauren. That was a wonderful interview. Beautiful thing you're doing at SAJ.
So now we're going to move to our next bat mitzvah story. This one from Winnie Hahn, who celebrated becoming a bat mitzvah as an adult.
My name is Winnie Hahn, and I became bat mitzvah in 2017 at the age of 44. I decided to become an adult bat mitzvah because it had been a number of years since I had converted to Judaism. When I converted, it was one of the most powerful spiritual experiences of my life. I loved it. I loved almost everything about it. I truly embraced Judaism with open arms. And then I stopped studying with my rabbi. And you could say I kind of really converted, because then I was only going to synagogue twice a year. Like, I became a full-on Jew. And my children got their B'nai Mitzvah date. I was no longer feeling engaged with Judaism, and that sense of spirituality and ritual had really dissipated from my life. And so I thought, what better than to just double down and become a bat mitzvah 1 month after my children's B'nai Mitzvah. And I mentioned it to my in-laws one night at Shabbat dinner, appropriately enough. And my 75-year-old mother-in-law turned to me and said, you know, I was never a bat mitzvah. You know, we didn't do that in my time. I would love to do this with you. And then we began a 2-year journey of Sunday morning classes. I learned how to read Torah. What really comes to mind when I think about my bat mitzvah was that process and how it led me to re-engage, re-embrace Judaism. Our Torah portion was Naso from the Book of Numbers. It's about people building in so many cubic feet in the tabernacle, and it's a census. But it turns out it was the best Torah portion for me. I grew up Korean-American in this tiny town in Southern Virginia called Lynchburg, Virginia, where no one else looked like me. And basically, there were very few Jews. And Naso really talks about God counting, right? And it turns out that Naso doesn't just mean to count, but it also means to lift up. And so you lift everyone up in order to count them. And I felt like, wow, I'm actually being seen and counted by God in a way that I never felt growing up in Lynchburg. So I have the most wonderful memories of my bat mitzvah.
Thank you so much, Winnie. It is never too late to celebrate being what you are.
I love that. It's a story like that that makes me, this is why I get angry whenever I hear someone say something or see someone treat a convert in any kind of way that suggests that they're somehow less of a Jew. I mean, this is the kind of thing that I see from converts often, which is a deep connection and feeling for Judaism that shows how fully Jewish they are.
I think that's true. I mean, I think that's one of the many reasons that it's so important to celebrate the bat mitzvah, because Winnie articulated so beautifully how this was a moment of her feeling seen. And I think for a lot of Jewish history, and still certainly in some communities still, women are meant not to be seen. They're meant to be modest, by which we mean sort of kept put away, not in communal leadership, not in ritual leadership, and it's just not okay. We know that it's a travesty to sort of keep women's voices to the side. So it's important to celebrate things like the bat mitzvah as a reminder to us that this is work that we need to continue to do and continue to grow into as we continue to center the voices of people who previously had been, at best, kept on the sidelines.
Yeah. Also, I love the idea of coming to it later in life. And, you know, we have decades and decades, a couple generations of women who didn't have the opportunity. And I like the it's never too late approach.
The way that Winnie talked about it as being inspired to learn more Torah, the bat mitzvah for her was a means, not an end. It was a means to reconnect with Judaism.
And what Winnie just told us was about recommitting to after her conversion and then just starting to live life and become a twice a year at synagogue Jew, seeing what her kids were going to do inspired her to reconnect and to recommit. I like the idea. I'm getting excited now because I feel like somebody's going to write to us at some point after this episode and say they were inspired by some of the voice messages they heard to celebrate being a bat mitzvah. I'm also remembering, even though it's a bar mitzvah memory, the bar mitzvah of my son, at that Shabbos service, my wife, who converted to Judaism, read from the Torah, and it's one of the most touching and moving memories that I have. It was incredible.
Speaking about people who became bat mitzvah, we're going to throw to our next voice memo from Atlanta, Georgia.
Hi, my name is Sarah Wiggins, and I am a senior at Spelman College. I think something that was really memorable was the whole preparation process for my bat mitzvah. I never went to Hebrew school growing up, didn't really know any Hebrew at all, but my saba, grandpa in Hebrew, he taught me everything I needed to know, everything from scratch. He would sit down on Tuesday evenings. He would come over to my house and we started off from square one, learning the alphabet and just eventually working up to, you know, me being able to read the Torah.
Celebrating becoming a bat mitzvah doesn't require a certain amount of knowledge. It just requires a little bit of work and sweat equity. Have you been to a bee mitzvah?
I have not. I've only watched one on TV.
Oh yeah? Where?
And Just Like That, the sequel to Sex and the City.
Right. And there was this moment where I think Charlotte and her husband, Harry, they have a child who is non-binary, whose name is Rock. And Rock is supposed to become Bi Mitzvah, but it all falls apart.
My darling, we have a situation.
I don't understand. What do you mean you don't want to go out there?
I just don't, Mom. I can't.
Yes, you can. You've been practicing and studying for months.
No, I haven't. You have. I'm not doing it. I don't believe in it.
Don't believe in what?
Any of this.
This what?
What,
do you what
mean?
This? What do you want, Rock? You want an Oculus? An Apple Watch? What's it gonna take?
That's not the point. I don't want to be labeled as anything. Not as a girl. Or boy, non-binary, a Jew, Christian, Muslim, or even a New Yorker.
What?
But so, wait, you're just nothing now? You're nothing?
I'm only 13. Can't I just be me?
This is not over. There are 300 people, 130 challahs, a rainbow high, and a trans rabbi. I did not come all this way and do all this work to have it end like this. Someone is going out there and getting they mitzvahed today.
That's Charlotte. She's such a Charlotte.
The family plans what they call a they mitzvah for Rock, which is not a bar mitzvah, which recognizes the spectrum and the diversity of gender. And at the last second, Rock decides they don't want to do it. And so instead, Charlotte reads from the Torah and celebrates being B mitzvah. I just want to say one thing as background, which typically in America, the term that has gained currency is a B mitzvah, which is problematic in its own right because it comes from the English and not from the Hebrew.
It's also a great idea for the next B movie premise.
Well, maybe when we sell the film rights to Chutzpah.
Yeah. Bi mitzvah. I would see that.
But this idea of a bi mitzvah has become so mainstream, thank God, maybe aspirationally so mainstream that it is on a show like, I'm going to call it Sex and the City.
And Just Like That, she called it Sex and the City. Can I say one last thing about that clip first?
Yeah.
130 challahs for 300 people is ridiculous. That's a challah for every 2.3 people, and they way overbought.
I think that's true, especially on the Upper East Side. Who really eats bread anymore?
Exactly. It should have been 4 challahs for 300 people.
I am totally 100% with you. I just want to talk about two things. You can decide which one to start with.
Sure.
I want to talk about the expansion from bar mitzvah to bat mitzvah to bi mitzvah. And I want to talk about the fact that I was really surprised to hear when Rabbi Lauren said that Rabbi Kaplan's daughter wasn't told until the night before her bat mitzvah that she was going to be doing this. That this idea that for a lot of generations, to a certain extent, young people didn't have a choice. Maybe it's an American thing. I don't think so. It's a Jewish thing. This is what you did when you were of a certain age.
Oh, you're doing it. You're doing it. You're going out there.
And there's the bribe. What will it take? We'll get you an Apple Watch, whatever it is. But but this idea that Rock is like, no, I don't want to do this. And so which one do you want to start with? Do you want to start with the B mitzvah?
Let's do the chronology, yes.
Okay. I know that, you know, I hang out with like a lefty crew. So a lot of the places I hang out with, the idea of a B mitzvah has become thoroughly accepted, entirely accepted. But again, a callback to what Batya was saying earlier, it's only become thoroughly accepted because of all of the non-binary, genderqueer young people who have had to go to their synagogues and say, I want to do this. And then the synagogues say, well, God forbid they say no. But even the ones that say yes say, okay, we don't know what that means, right? What does that look like? How does it look different? And that I do think slash hope that this idea of a bi mitzvah is going to continue to spread, at least in America, for some time to come.
I think so, too. It also speaks to the nature of progress. When do we think the first bar mitzvah celebration was?
That was probably thousands of years ago.
So between millennia ago to 1922, took quite a long time for the bat mitzvah to become part of our tradition. And the time between the bat mitzvah and the bi mitzvah, much less. Like, you know, progress can be glacial, and then it can get a little momentum going and pick up some speed, and we can see more and more new stuff more quickly. And that gives me a little hope.
I think that's true. And I think, you know, look, there are Jewish laws that are very difficult to change in certain circumstances. It would be very difficult to make pork kosher. But then there are Jewish traditions that are based as much on the cultures that Jews are living in than the laws themselves. And the idea of a non-male person acknowledging that they are a Jew by standing in front of the community and teaching or leading services or just saying, Hineni, I am here, there is nothing technically, halachically wrong with that. There is nothing outside of Jewish law with that. It's just that for thousands of years, that's not how women or non-binary people were seen in larger culture. And so it's like, you're right. There is this door that has been opened and there are these floodgates, right? Like the dike is bursting, which I kind of like that because it means a bunch of things in the context of this conversation, right? Like
yes.
It's bursting and all different people are able to sort of acknowledge the fullness of who they are in intersectional ways, right? You don't have to be queer over there and Jewish over here and a woman over there and a Republican over here. I'd like to meet that person. Let's talk about this other part. Let's say one of your kids had said to you, I don't want to do this. I don't want to have a bat mitzvah. What would you have said?
Well, you know, the night before my son Avi's bar mitzvah, he said, wow, I've been dreading this for 7 years. I didn't say, oh, you don't have to do this. The question is what I would have done if he had come up to me 7 years earlier or somewhere between then and the bar mitzvah. I think I definitely had a moment regarding other observances where I said to him and have said to both my kids, oh, it's yours now. Now you decide what it is to be Jewish. So I think I might have drawn the line at the bar mitzvah ceremony because, you know, maybe it's old school of me, but to me, it's like, that's when you become a Jew. And I hope it means that you decide to continue your connection and explore it. And both of my kids have in their own ways. But that was also the point at which I said, you can eat what you want to eat. You can do what you want to do, because it's only going to be meaningful if being Jewish or observing or connecting is, you have your own agency now. The religion says you're an adult. I buy that. And so you can do what you want within the, as far as it comes to Judaism.
Yeah. I am no longer bought in on this idea that every kid has to become bi mitzvah. This idea of this is like a rite of passage that you have to do, I don't think it serves us well in the long term.
Well, especially as we've discussed, You're 13. You got two hairs down there. You're a bar mitzvah, my friend. So, you know, maybe give them a pass on celebrating it if that's not something they feel they want to celebrate, or let them decide how they want to celebrate.
So I want to throw to Rachel Zuckerman, who tells a beautiful story about her bat mitzvah.
My mom was raised Episcopalian and converted to Judaism when she and my dad got married. So half of my family is Christian. And while they understood that a bat mitzvah is an important part of Jewish life and they knew the basic procedures of it, you lead a service, you read Torah, etc., that's about it. One of the most poignant moments of my bat mitzvah was looking down from the bima at my Christian grandma sitting in the front row of the congregation and meeting her eyes and just seeing this look of immense pride on her face. She didn't understand the Hebrew and she didn't get it, you know, like my Jewish grandma did. But she knew that this was an incredible accomplishment for me. She knew that I had put an incredible amount of work into this. And she knew that this was a monumental moment for me as a Jewish woman. And, you know, 29 years later, I can still perfectly picture her sitting there beaming up at me. And it means so much to me that she, as a Christian woman, could have such appreciation for what I was doing and what I was achieving, not only as a woman, but as a Jew.
Love it. That's a sweet memory.
It's really, really beautiful. And again, it speaks to what the Jewish community actually looks like today, which includes Christian grandmas all over the place.
Yeah. And at both my daughter's bat mitzvah and my son's bar mitzvah, Melissa's non-Jewish side of the family came and they loved it. They got it. They appreciated it. They supported it. They celebrated it. It amplified the fun and the meaning of the ceremonies.
One of the practices that's become sort of de rigueur in the American bat mitzvah scene is the tikkun olam, or social justice project, that each celebrant does as a way of making manifest the understanding that social justice is an inherent part of what it means to participate in Judaism.
And as a way of feeling okay about taking all that money from guests and keeping it.
Or they can give a good portion of the money they take to social justice projects. But actually, so this week with what's been happening in Ukraine, I've been thinking a lot about the project that I did when I became a bat mitzvah all those years ago. In 1986, in those days, Jews in the former Soviet Union were not permitted to live full Jewish lives. So in those days, many young people would become twinned. They would be assigned a twin with someone from the former Soviet Union for whom they would celebrate becoming bat mitzvah or bar mitzvah alongside this other person who was not being afforded that privilege. And so when I became bat mitzvah, I did it for myself and one other person who I'm going to call Julia for purposes of this podcast, because she doesn't want to be named. I have tracked her down. She left Ukraine, where she lived. She grew up in Kharkov. Now she lives in the New York area. It reminded me of the deep Jewish connection to many places in the former Soviet Union, but especially to Ukraine. I am deeply grateful that at least she and her immediate family are out of harm's way. And it reminded me that as much as we would like to curl up into the fetal position and look away, we are all connected in ways known and unknown.
And that does it for our second consecutive, very special episode of Chutzpod. And just like that, the episode ended. There are all sorts of people we want to thank for participating. We had a profusion of guests, wonderful, esteemed guests. We had Toby, Nicole, Batya, Winnie, Sarah, Rachel, and Rabbi Lauren. Thank you all for sharing your time and your thoughts and your stories. They were fabulous. We want to thank Hadag Nachash for allowing us to use their fabulous song, Lazuz, as our intro music. We want to thank PRX for helping us develop the show and distributing it. We want to thank our fearless executive producer, Tim Shovers, who's the glue that holds the whole thing together. And we want to exhort you, if we may, seriously, folks, follow us on social media. If you enjoy the show, subscribe to it and write us a little 5-star review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. If you don't like the show, why are you listening? It's the very end of an episode. Admit it. You like the show. That's why you're listening.
And Josh and I have already started pre-gaming for our Purim episode, recording at 1:30 in the morning Israel time, which is 7:30. Yes, we did get angry emails about this. 7:30 p.m. Eastern time, 4:30 Pacific time, Sunday night. Be there with bells on or at least a costume. You can sign up on our website. Reminder, we're changing our clocks this weekend.
It's hard to find a time zone that makes everybody happy, and we do have a listener in the Cayman Islands, and we have to take her into account too. I normally here would recommend that you stick around for the Rabbi's guided meditation. Instead, we have a special treat. So stick around as Rabbi Shira Stutman shares with us a little bit of her bat mitzvah speech.
All of you gathered here today have helped me prepare for this day in your special way. You've done everything from making the dress that I'm wearing today to just being here. To all of you, I give my thanks. This is the most trite thing I have ever seen in my entire life, and I am not going to subject you to any more of it. Shabbat shalom.